Hey, I'm Freddie Kraft. I decided to sleep in this morning and miss Door Bumper Clear, which, oh, by the way, is presented by OfferPad. Today, we'll break down the race at Vegas, including Joey Logano blocking yet again, a debris caution that changed everything, and my new contract. I'm going to be the highest paid spotter in NASCAR history now that the GOAT, Michael Jordan, is coming into NASCAR. Hey, Bubba Wallace, new team. Let's get ready, set, go.
Nobody's listening, but I don't care. I'm on an episode of Door Bumper Clear.
I'm PJ Majors.
This is Brent Griffin.
Get ready.
Be ready. Be ready.
Give me what you got here.
New leader.
Watch out for this guy.
White flag.
Recognize.
Go low. Go low. Clear.
Bring home.
Three wide.
Coming to the line.
Door Bumper Clear.
Hey everybody, I am TJ Majors, spotter of the 22 Cup car, the 99 truck, and it's like a halfway full house today.
Yeah, Brett Griffin, spotter for Clint Bowyer in the old Cup Series. It's like the old times, man. It's just me and TJ here kicking it. We're not sitting on a couch, and KristenMingle.com is not the hostess with the mostest anymore. She's now taken by some dude named Alan, but we do have our sub hostess with the mostest, who also yesterday overconsumed herself in gin. What kind of gin were you drinking? What was the flavor?
I don't even know what the flavor was, to be honest
Beef
with you.
Tanqueray?
It didn't matter.
It didn't matter. It hurt. That's all I got to say. It was my cousin's wedding, and I was drinking gin and 7-Up, and I was like, oh, I'll have one. And the next thing you know, I had way more than one. And flying, especially commercial home when you are hungover, is not fun.
You're supposed to drink gin and juice. That's what the song says.
You can't go to a wedding and say,
lay back with my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
You don't go to a major event like that and say, I'll just have one. That doesn't happen.
Oh, no, I know. It was bad.
You knew what you were getting into, Hannah. Disappointed in your wording here.
Sipping on gin and 7-Up. So you the whole song up right there. You can't even say that and make the lyrics work.
Yeah, I thought I was still young enough that I could like rebound back of it, but apparently not.
How many hours do you drink gin?
This does not get easier as you get older.
I think gin tastes like pine straw. You're really young to be a gin drinker.
I don't picture you to be a gin drinker at all.
I started drinking mimosas at like probably like 9 or 10 a.m. because we were getting ready. And because I was part of the bridal party. And then I started drinking gin as soon as the wedding, like the actual ceremony was over. So 4:30, 5.
Are you kidding me? You just said here that I said I would go and only have one, but we started off with mimosas at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mimosas, not whatever. Mimosas, mimosas.
Mimosas.
You can't, learned my lesson.
What's in there, gin?
Hair of the dog. No, it's juice.
And gin.
Mimosas are, you got to be careful with mimosas. They'll sneak up on you.
Yeah, they do. Like one second you're like, this tastes fine. It just tastes like champagne and juice. And the next thing you know, you're
champagne and juice. Now we're changing the lyrics again.
I'm glad you're a warrior and you made it today, because unlike someone else,
a lot tougher than your co-host apparently.
Yeah, unlike someone else who needs his beauty sleep and there's not enough of that to go around for him, he's not here. Freddie Kraft is missing in action. He actually avoided Brett's FaceTime call, which actually woke him up.
I think I woke him up. I landed at about 4:45 a.m., made it to bed about 5:30 a.m., slept for maybe 3 or 4 hours. You know how it is, TJ. Like, you just 100%. Can't sleep.
No. I went to bed about 6, and family was out of town last week, so I didn't see my kids from the early part of the week. So, of course, they're in there first thing in the morning, you know, hey, Daddy, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, oh, hey. So daylight out, can't really go back to sleep. Maybe Freddie needs kids.
Maybe Freddie needs kids, because kids don't know what time it is. They don't know if you.
They don't care what time it is.
They don't care if you took a red eye flight home. They don't care if you had too much gin, Hannah. They don't care. It's time to get up and eat, and all they want to know is get up and feed me.
Yeah, and that plate. Will you play with me? Want to play a Play-Doh? You want? Yeah. Want to play Barbie dolls? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well. That being said, you guys had clearly a rough flight home, but how was Vegas as a whole?
You've never seen Las Vegas like this. I mean, clearly we've been to a lot of markets and a lot of cities, and I'm a Vegas guy. Like, I love to go out to eat there. I love to gamble. I love everything about Vegas, but I have never been somewhere. And listen, I'm a mask guy. I'm pro-mask. I wear my mask everywhere that I'm required to wear it, because I think it's the responsible thing to do. But they would – they would have the weirdest mask rules. For example, Hannah, if you went to the pool, the hotel pool, which was open, you could sit by yourself on the pool deck, and you had to wear your mask. And if you got a drink, such as a pina colada, which I did manage to get, you had to take your mask down, drink your pina colada, and put your mask right back up in between sips. Like, you couldn't just sit around the pool with your mask down, even though you're sitting by yourself. But if you want to take your mask off, you just get in the pool. So apparently the coronavirus can't live in the pool. If your feet are in the pool, no mask required. And then you sit down at blackjack, which is typically six people playing the game, right? They've changed that. It's now three people playing the game, and they have plexiglass up all the way around the table. So you're sitting there, just like TJ are sitting here 6 feet apart, but you're sitting there with a piece of glass between you and your player beside of you, and there's a piece of glass like a bank teller in front of you between you and the dealer, and you're required to wear your mask at all times, even if you have a beer. So you can pull your mask down, take a sip of beer, put your mask back up. It's crazy, but then I can leave that area right there where I'm literally by myself. And if Freddie was hanging out with me and when I was gambling, he had to stand 6 feet behind me. Even though we're buddies and everything, he couldn't stand up there and, you know, us shoot the while we were gambling. But if we left there and walked to a restaurant, we could sit down. He could literally sit in my lap and we could eat dinner together with no mask on. It's just the lawmakers in that state. I mean, look, to me, when I hear the word Nevada, I think about Las Vegas, Reno, Carson City, and I think about obviously the tourist industry and the gambling industry. And look, I think they're trying to be safe, but they're ruining the culture of what that town's about. And look, flights are cheap, man. Rooms are cheap, and that's why, because it's not the same Las Vegas that we all knew to grow and love. But it'll be back. But it was. I mean, look, it's like everything else we've done this summer, TJ. It's earth shattering. You get there and you're like, wow, we're not in the same America we've been in.
Yeah, definitely looked different. I didn't gamble or anything, but just walking through the casino, you could see it was a little bit different. But nonetheless, I'm glad we got to go there, and you know, I think there was a question whether we were going to be able to go and race there.
No, I mean, yeah, for sure, and no fans were there, so we could have fans gambling in the casino and at the sports book, but you couldn't have fans outside of the racetrack. Just super I just get confused by these lawmakers.
Yeah,
and yeah. So anyway.
You should have printed off a really big picture of his head so we could pull the mic up to it.
We need a.
I was going to say, I'm trying to see what picture that is of him.
It's a great picture, Freddie. He's got on a Hannah Newhouse shirt.
He does.
In the picture.
So that picture was from last week. Does he really know he does? That's from last week or the week before?
Yeah, last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need a Freddie Fathead. Can we get one of those made?
Well, if he was here, we'd have one.
Oh, he's going to get you for that one.
Oh, no, he knows.
So anyway, Freddie overslept, and I believe that because I could have overslept this morning. And he blamed it on the fact that his phone died, which I don't believe because everybody plugs their phone in.
And didn't he send you a voicemail when you FaceTimed him?
Yeah, we tried to FaceTime him. He wouldn't answer. Then he texted Jason and I and said he
It actually rang, it. Though, for FaceTime. Like, it rang.
Yeah, if it was dead, it probably wouldn't have rang.
Exactly. So, Freddie, we're going to need to work on your excuse.
So, he
book
told the
well.
Truth that he overslept, but he lied.
Yeah, and he's the only one in our group that was like, oh, solid. I'll sleep for 4 hours. That'll be all right. He's the only one that commented on the sleep amount.
Hey, Brett, you got a gift next to you. Did you check that out yet?
Uh-uh. What is it?
It was a special delivery from someone you know well.
It's huge.
Ooh.
Oh, it's got my name on it. It does. Here's the bad news. It doesn't say Brett and TJ. It just says.
Yeah, that's. I just hope it's not from Mike. Was it from the 00 truck driver? He was here.
Oh, he was here last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was welcoming in a parking lot.
Yeah.
I'm not good at opening gifts. I'm one of those people that just tears it up.
You just ruined that.
All right. I got us.
Oh, there's a book in there.
Got a nice little note from our friends at OfferPad, Kyle Rush, for appreciating all that we do, going the extra mile to prove that NASCAR works. So if you're listening to this thing right now, this podcast of ours, make sure you go to OfferPad.com, check them out, list your home. They'll tell you how much your home's worth, and then if you love it, then take the deal, man. TJ, I've got a lot of stuff in my bar, but I don't have any Johnny Walker Blue Label.
Well, now you do.
I think this is probably expensive.
Do you want me to look it up?
let's guess the over-under on this.
Oh, I have no idea. I don't buy alcohol like that.
I don't either. I can't afford it.
You're gonna be way closer than I would be.
Let's go with $200.
Did you get a bottle of bourbon like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, the one sitting on the table?
Mm.
Oh, look at that. It's pretty.
That's big. Yeah,
Show
the camera.
Johnny Walker Blue Label. Look at that.
How many ounces is it?
I think 1.5 at the time will do it for you. It's a lot. It's a fifth. Johnny Walker Blue Label. Over under $200. Hannah, what do you got? Over under.
I don't. It's a fifth. I'm going to go under, but just slightly.
There's a $300 bottle right there. And that's bigger than that.
Oh.
Yeah. It says, the first Google search is, why is Blue Label so expensive? It recreates early whiskey blends and will go anywhere between $174 and $450 based on the size.
That might be $199.
I can't even open something that costs that much money. This just goes in my bar for decoration.
Is that it?
That's it.
It's $199.
That's it.
You went
Did
over.
I not just say, just barely?
You got it by a penny.
What'd you say, Hannah?
I said just barely under $200.
Thanks to Kyle Rush, our friends at OfferPad. I can't drink it, but it's going to look great in my bar.
The box is phenomenal looking. I heard there was some good tweets going out last night. Did I miss? I didn't go back and look yet, but.
Oh, Kyle Busch.
Yeah. Are we talking about that later?
Oh, yeah. He was on one last night. I saw a couple of those when I landed.
He's usually pretty good when he gets on a little Twitter rant. Yeah, he's pretty good at that. So
he responded to one guy, said, you sir are. Holy cow, my face hurts.
I just like his responses. You, sir, are it's pretty good. That's classic Kyle, though. That's the Kyle you like to see come out. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, most of his interviews, he doesn't hold back. So, and I can appreciate that.
He's been pretty good, though, this year as far as, like, pretty mellow in the interview aspect, all things considered. Like, with the year he's had, I feel like I would have expected him to probably, you know, come unleashed a couple times. But I feel like for the most part, honestly, he's been pretty tame. Maybe I've just missed it, but.
For the year he's having, I think he's being pretty good.
That's what I'm saying.
Hi, we're OfferPad, the new way homes are sold. Go to OfferPad.com, tell us about your home, and we'll send you a great purchase offer. Or, if that's not your style, we can also list your home with tons of free OfferPad services. Free handyman fixes, house cleaning, yard work, and more. To get your home show ready, we can even advance renovation costs to maximize your home's value. Whatever way you want to sell, you're sold with OfferPad. Sell your way today at OfferPad.com.
Spot on. Spot on, you like it. Spot off, you don't like it. And you say why either way.
Well, now it is time for spot on, spot off. And we'll go ahead and start it here with TJ because Logano blocked Chase Elliott on lap 32. Elliott says, make sure the nose is okay from that up there, followed by Alan saying he just needs to get sent sooner or later. You want to start that one, TJ?
I'm not. I mean, that's two comments from crew chiefs from there this year that I don't. I mean, look, man, we're racing. Chase blocks people. Everyone. That's this type of racing now. You're defending positions. You know, we went to the bottom off of turn two because we saw Chase had a big run and we knew where he was going to go. You take that away, drive through the middle. You know what I mean? Drive through the middle, like. It's a wide straightaway, but there's blocking on restarts. There's blocking. You're the biggest weapon on offense and the biggest weapon for defense is track position and air, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really my car is better than yours anymore. It's I have track position on you and I have the air advantage. So you're defending that. It's hard to describe. This type of racing is what this is. I mean, we go to Talladega next week. There's going to be blocking there by everybody. You're going to want to protect your position and you want to get the momentum behind you. It's just racing. Like, it's going to happen. Every single driver on that track ran a lane at some point to put their car in front of another car, whether you like it or not, it's going to happen.
I mean, don't threaten me with a good time. Like if you're gonna send a guy, just send him. But the guy that's capable of sending him is sitting on a pit box. He's not in the race car. So I do think that people are tired of being blocked by Joey Logano. I do think they're tired of the storyline. I didn't see the block. I think some blocks are warranted. and I think some blocks are not. I mean, prime example, yesterday we were on the front stretch, and, you know, we shot the bottom, and we were in the middle of crazy traffic on some of those insane
restarts.
Insane restarts, man. Three wide, four wide, looking five wide. You're second from the top, like just spotting like you've never spotted before it at Las Vegas. And we cleared two guys coming out of four, and I cleared Clint up in front of the 32 car. And I was like, he's coming back, one, half, quarter. And just as I say that, Clint scoots up in front of him. And it wasn't to block him because it was the 32 car, right? I mean, we're not worried about those guys, quote, passing us back. But we had to get up to pick the momentum up, getting into one to get the car wound back up to get through one and two. And LaJoy, you know, hit us in the butt. And he hit us in the butt because we essentially pulled up in front of him. But we had already cleared him. It was not like he had a run coming to us to pass us. But nonetheless, we have to do that.
We threw a block. If you don't, he gets back out there at your quarter panel, and the guy behind him has a run. You have to do it. Like, that's just how this racing is. It's not like, hey, your car is better than – you're just better than me. Now you get me, you go on. It's more racy now than it's ever been. And that guy – and honestly, the 32 car is not – like, those guys are fairly competitive.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not winning cars, but they're fairly competitive, and they can –
speed on restarts.
Yeah. And the only reason – you know, the part that bothers, there's people blocking every single lap. You know, we caught Denny a couple times to the lead. Guess what? Denny blocked us. But it just happens. It happens. I think people look for the 22 to block somebody, and it just gets called out every single time. If you think Joey is the only guy that ever throws a block on that racetrack, you don't watch a race.
We look at the gentleman's agreement that used to be in place around here. And it's out the window. I mean, it just is flat out the window. Like, you truly have to race like a butthole, especially on restarts. And as a spotter, it's a lot. I mean, it used to be you helped manage the restart. You helped get settled in. You helped find your rhythm. You managed your tires, and then you tried to go past cars. And now, if you don't get it on a restart and you don't get it in all that traffic, there's a solid chance you may not get it to the air that TJ
way harder
about.
To get back now.
You know, if you come out of a restart sixth, there's a chance you're going to run sixth until you pit
100%.
And if you restart sixth and you come out 12th, there's a solid chance you're going to run 11th to 13th, you know, until you pit. Like, where you come out is where you run, so it makes those restarts be even more wild.
You have to protect, man. You have to. Those stage points that we got in the first stage made our race. Because we got, obviously, we'll talk about it in a little bit, we had to pit for a tire. But those stage points matter. And if Chase gets around us there, and you know what? Chase gets to that inside down the backstretch, and we wash up the racetrack a little bit, because it's hard to get through 3 and 4 a little bit.
Yeah.
Two cars get by us. That's 2 points. That's 2 points, two stage points right there. Because you're, like Brett said, I saw Chase run guys down and couldn't get around him. Had a faster car. We caught Denny. Couldn't get around him. Maybe we were a little fast time. Maybe we weren't. He ended up driving back away. But whoever Chase caught, I saw a couple times, they drove back away from him. But Chase was faster at the time, but just couldn't do anything. You know, and that's – you have to get everything you can. And like you said, there's times where, you know, that you really just can't do it. But if the guy sees it coming and the guy's – and you have a guy like this talented enough to Joey to put his car where he knows he can be, you can't cross the nose. If you try to block a guy and he's got, you know – 6 inches there, you're going to get spun out.
Yeah.
But you give a guy like Joey good enough info, he can place his car where it's damn near impossible to get around him sometimes. And that's, you have to do that now, yeah. In my opinion. That's how we have to race.
Yeah. I think you have to be a little careful of the run and when you do it and how you do
like
it.
I said, you can't get turned. You're ruining your race.
Yeah.
But you tell it, you know, Joey's really good at knowing what runs he can block and what runs he can't. And dissecting that info and making the decision on it. He ultimately, the drivers all make the decisions on it, whether they want to block that run or not. But, you know, that's just, like Brett said, you get line in sixth place after two laps, that's probably where you're going to run.
Yeah.
One or maybe a give or take a spot, depending on if you catch a lap car at the wrong time and get checked up or something like that.
There's few cars that can pass.
It was very hard to pass. Very hard to pass. So, and, I mean, we saw the race winner. Last night, not really a competitive shot to win all day. Wins the race, got out front.
TJ, I didn't see him in the top 10.
Exactly.
Much at all.
Yep.
Well, and you talked about it there, TJ, as far as coming down pit road and having to get a tire. So we'll just start that one off with Joey Logano develops a tire rub after contact with Kyle Busch when Denny Hamlin goes three wide for the lead in stage two. And you can start that one off as well.
I think it's just a racing deal. You could see it coming, but you know, we were turning off the wall already, and the 11 wasn't inside of us. And I think I'll get Brett's opinion in a minute, but I think it kind of spooked Kyle a little bit. And Kyle opened the wheel up. You could see the car jerk a little bit and go to the right. And that's not a normal move for a guy that's already turned off into the corner. If you know that guy is going to be there, you kind of leave the lane and you don't go up the racetrack on that abruptly like you did. You know, Denny got clear halfway down the backstretch, was able to get a big run because two cars were side by side in front of him, and that's just what happens in this package. They punch a huge hole in the air. Denny gets a big run, and at the last second, you know, he cuts to the bottom, the dive to the bottom, and, you know, the 18, we're driving off the 18. The 18's trying to side draft us to shoot down to the bottom in the corner, and I really think it just surprised them. I think it surprised the 18, and as soon as I saw Denny turn off the wall, I started calling two inside, but we're already turned in. Joey can't – like Kyle had no choice either but to turn the wheel to the right a little bit, and, you know, it's just – everything closes up in a hurry like that. Like, we saw it kind of coming, but we didn't really – when you turn off the wall, you're kind of already picked your lane for the corner. Your trajectory is already decided for where you're going to be when you get into the corner. And I think it just spooked them a little bit, which kind of spooked us, and we all just kind of brushed it. It wasn't bad, but it was enough to where we hit at the right spot, and we had a tire going down.
I'd be curious to know how Tony Hirschman spots this package now that it's changed so much, because the old Kyle Busch, and I've only spotted one race for Kyle Busch in my life, and it was a Truck Series race at Talladega. And Kyle didn't like a lot of information on runs that were coming and on looking inside. He only wanted to know if they were inside or outside in a lot of scenarios. And he said it, quote, distracted him to hear that extra information. And I'd be curious, because Tony's a good spotter, and Tony's one of the guys up there with a lot of racing knowledge. And I mean, look, there's 40 guys up there ish. I'd say Tony's a top 10 guy. You agree with that?
I mean, his track record, can't really argue it.
Well, he sucked yeah. until he got to Kyle Busch. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure Jason could spot for Kyle Busch. But back to the thing, Tony Hirschman, I would imagine with the way this package has evolved that Tony had to change the way he spots, that Kyle had to let him change the way he spots. So if he got surprised on that, clearly there's some dialogue between the spotter and driver that can get lost or confused. And hey, I'm not going to lie to you guys. Sometimes these runs are so freaking big, when you key up to say it, you're like, holy cow, where did that run even come from? And I saw a tweet yesterday from Kelly Crandall, who I personally think a lot of. I think her work ethic's greatest journalist in the sport. And she mentioned that Joey had said to you over the radio that he didn't know he was three wide in time.
Yeah.
How did you guys come back from that? And was this the same incident?
To your point about what Kyle was doing, Kyle was at our left rear tire. So Kyle was staring at our car, trying to side draft us, because Kyle – and we're turning off the wall. Like, we're turning into the corner. So Kyle's trying to turn off of us and shoot to the bottom, and he's probably not even looking at – I mean, he's driving off of us, like trying to side draft us. You can't be looking in the mirror staring at that guy if you're side drafting a guy. And, you know, Joey's sitting there watching his left front. Well, I tell Joey, look, 11's clear, three back. You know, inside, two inside. Like, it was so late into, like, I didn't expect Danny to make that move, to be honest with you. But, you know, you try to give a lot of info as quick. And like you said, some of them runs are so big. And I don't know, man. It's just, it can happen, I guess. That was a very super aggressive move by Denny, but obviously worked great for him.
It's hard when you see Clint Bowyer and then Kevin Harvick right behind him. You in your brain as a spotter go, his teammate ain't going to do anything to screw him right here. And then when he kamikazes him and dive bombs him getting in the corner, it takes us off guard and takes us a second to communicate that.
I saw the run coming, and I mean, it's so late into the corner. Like, even if I would have – Joey's still got to drive off Kyle almost. You're not just going to, oh, Danny's got a big run, let me just get up out of the way here. You know, to me, the move was forced, and it was kind of like you knew there was probably going to be contact as late as it was into the corner. You almost, it's almost inevitable. There's going to be contact.
Kyle did not make an attempt to block him.
No, that's, you have to take that away early. Like, if that was us, I wouldn't really been worried about the guy on the outside, because you don't want a guy to put you in the middle into three. You don't want to be in the middle going into three. So to me, you take the bottom away before the 11 gets there, and you don't give them a choice. You don't give the 11 a choice to get to your inside and do that. You drive, and honestly, if Kyle takes it away a little bit and acts like he's going to cover it, then he probably just lifts, follows him into the corner.
So this is second week in a row you and Kyle have kind of had a tiff.
I don't really call this. I mean, it's just racing there. Kyle was just, I mean, we were racing for the lead. That was actually pretty fun racing with Kyle for the lead. So. Well,
I thought you did it on purpose because I picked Joey in DBC and you were tired of me winning this thing every year.
Yeah.
Because I looked pretty damn good there until you screwed it up.
Don't even look at it, TJ. You didn't win.
Well, I know I didn't win because TJ screwed it up.
I had it.
Can I pick for Freddie this week?
Yep.
He sent me his picks, but
nah, he don't get the pick.
Freddie just woke up in his
house. He doesn't get the pick if you don't show up.
He gets a DNQ.
Freddie's like a Harry Teletubby right now. He just woke up in his drawers on his big-ass couch.
Freddie's back asleep.
With his dog, Mo, laying beside of him. And I'm going to tell you something. Freddie bought a new truck, and I opened the door to look at his new truck. I was like, man, I like your truck. Dude, you ain't never seen so much dog hair in the back seat. It's a brand-new truck.
You know they make backseat covers and stuff
that are super cheap. I have, yeah. Like, the sling that goes across my back seat that, like, when it hangs out in, it's perfect.
Probably, like, $30-$40 bucks, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
they're awesome.
That's really, I mean, we started this show. Freddie ignored us. If Freddie would have got up, Freddie lives semi close to here.
5 minutes.
Freddie could have got up, brushed his teeth, and
that's all.
Yeah, and put some clothes on. He could have wore the.
No, he could have came like that. I wouldn't have minded.
Okay, so a shirtless Freddie, which is what you will get if you use. Yeah, if you use OfferPad and you move, Fred, that's what you'll get. Yeah, so Freddie could have been here, but his care level was too low.
Jason, can we pull out of the archives Freddie doing that move from the Goonies?
Truffle shuffle.
Yeah, can we pull that out and put it out there on social this week just to get him back for oversleeping?
We can antagonize him all week. We got that.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to.
What an idiot. Who misses their own show?
That's impressive.
Yeah.
His care level was down. Brett got up, argued with somebody. I got up and played Barbies. I mean.
Oh.
The caution comes out during green flag pit stops, which leaves only one playoff car of Kurt Busch on the lead.
Of course
laps.
It does. Why would it not?
Oh, spot off. This ruined my night. It ruined my chance to really be in a decent position. Look, we were making up a bunch of playoff points on a guy like Joey Logano, on a guy like Kyle Busch. You know, we had 4 stage points throughout the night total. 1 in stage 1, 3 in stage 2, and then we roll in, and we're going to get a top dang 6 finish, and then all these cautions start coming, and we just keep getting further and further back. And this particular caution, I think we came off pit road like 1 lap down and 24th and wave around eligible. And then you're back there behind guys that you literally haven't seen in 6 months. So it's extremely difficult to be able to go out there and make that up. We ended up with a 12th place finish and are still 20 points out. That's how much ground those guys made up. And look, you put a guy in that TJ said was not capable of winning or contending to win all night. So shout out to his crew chief, Matt McCall, because to me, look, they've had some weird strategies this year, even going back to Richmond. And they did some things that none of us understood. And then you look at what Matt McCall did here, former Hickory late model racer.
Yep.
Had a couple of Xfinity Series starts. I spotted for him at Dover back in the day. Robert Yates Racing, he and Stephen Light split that car, the number 90 car, if you guys remember that in the Busch Series, Xfinity Series. And shout out to him, man. Big call. Won the race.
Yeah, that and, I mean, not really. You're praying at that point when you're him for the caution to come out. I mean, you're literally praying the entire time. And it worked for him. But more credit to Kurt for taking advantage of, you know, it was handed to Kurt. And Kurt made it happen. He got put in restart situations that were absolutely crazy. And he got up on the wheel and won it, man. Kurt, he did it to us at Kentucky last year, man. Kurt got up on the wheel and got him a win. So, and it's a big win. The only way this win would be better is if it happened after the road course race, if he was into the next round. This is a huge win for Kurt and his team there. But, you know, I gotta be.
He didn't have fans. Like, it is home track.
Yeah. Well, anyone, you know,
he could thank his governor for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I gotta be spot off for the caution at that point. I don't know if there was any. I didn't personally see any debris. I don't know if you what the TV showed. Was there debris on the track or was that all on the apron? Where was it? You know what I mean? But nonetheless, you know, there was if there was debris out there, it's a legit caution. We can't be blowing tires. We can't be running ourselves in the racetrack. But spot off for the timing of the caution. It didn't benefit us at all either. So, but you just came off of last week where you benefited huge.
First time all year, though. Like, we're 30 races in. I finally get a caution. Next week, I get screwed by a caution.
Well, you benefited huge last week. So now it's a wash with you.
Yeah, it's a wash. It's 100-1.
Anyways, next fun. Denny Hamlin announces that he's forming a new Cup team with Michael Jordan and Bubba Wallace as the new driver. TJ.
I mean, I'm really disappointed in Freddie and Bubba that they couldn't just use this to do the announcement. What a golden opportunity to do it. Spot on for them. You know, great opportunity for Bubba. Like he said on the show, betting on himself. Denny, you know, I know Denny fairly well from back in the day, but I know one thing: when Denny does something, Denny usually does it pretty damn big. So I can see, you know, this being a great opportunity for Bubba. And the biggest thing, I mean, we have Michael Jordan involved in the sport now. So that's going to touch a lot of areas that would never get touched, you know, like fan base, you know, involved in NASCAR. So I think it's great all the way around.
Yeah, I don't know how anybody could spot off this. I mean, you look at Bubba and his career and the deficiencies that he suffered really since he left KBM. And now he's going to get in a situation that certainly looks like it's going to go out and compete. But startup teams, man, it's very rare we see them come in and be super, super yes. competitive.
And this team will be all over. Media is going to eat this team up.
I think that the timing is a little weird. Because they're coming in and they're going to run an obsolete race car for 1 year, and then we're going to switch to the Gen 7 car. So there's some challenges there because you're going to have to put a lot of resources on the table in order to fill these cars, which are not going to be even useful a year from now. That's a hard expense to swallow. But here's the thing. They got a lot of sponsorship to do that. When I look at this, this is what excites me the most about this whole opportunity. You tell me one company in America that would turn this phone call down. Hey, this is Michael Jordan, and I'm started a race team, me, Denny Hamlin. I got my driver, Bubba Wallace. We'd love to fly out and have 20, 30 minutes of your time to tell you what we can do for your company. You tell me one CEO in America that's not going to take that meeting. You tell me one CEO that's not going to say, hey, I want to be a part of this. Like, they have more marketing prowess in this particular instance than anything we've ever seen.
Deal.
Here's the kicker, though. If Michael Jordan is truly as involved as we think he's going to be, and I don't know of any other outlet in NASCAR, if you people pay attention sometimes, we tell you what's going to happen without telling you what's going to happen. How many times have we said Michael Jordan on this show in the last month?
I think you were in the first one to mention it.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't trying to break anything.
We sure got McGee last week, didn't we?
Yeah. Hey, McGee, you think Michael Jordan's coming? No, 30 minutes later. Michael Jordan to enter NASCAR ownership. I tried to set Ryan up to look extremely smart right there, and he just bowed out. He didn't want anything to do with it.
I mean, Ryan, if he would have listened to two or three shows before that, he would have just went along with it. But now it's – what a great opportunity for sponsors and just the sport in general, man. Like,
my favorite part – is when we have Bubba on here, and I'm going to say this without Freddie being here to defend himself. Okay, Freddie didn't tell
His own
me.
Fault.
Freddie didn't tell me everything. You know, he might have threw me bits and pieces here and there when things would happen, but it would be typically after I'd already heard him. So we get Bubba on the show, and the first thing Freddie says is, "I don't think we want Bubba on the show. I think we want to wait until he does his announcement." And I said, "I don't want to do that because he's going to go on every major media outlet in the country. Then, like, I want him." Before the announcement, I want to know, how did he quit Richard Petty Motorsports? I want to know certain things. Well, what Freddie didn't know is that I was going to ask him, have you talked to Michael Jordan? Freddie, about his pants over there in that chair, because look, at that point we'd heard rumblings that maybe Michael was out. But yeah. Freddie and Bubba had just talked the day before, so now Freddie thinks that Bubba thinks that he sold him out, that he told me something, which Freddie didn't. So I just was curious if Bubba had talked to Michael Jordan, and Freddie was sweating bullets. If you guys go back and listen to that show and listen to how quickly Freddie changed subjects, it's because he thought Bubba was going to kick his ass because he thought he had ratted something out. But honestly, huge.
Wouldn't have been Freddie's first meeting in Carpetland.
No. But seriously, if I am the president of NASCAR, I'm thrilled by this. If I am the president of Toyota, I'm thrilled by this. Like, there are a lot of people I think this can get excited. And listen, I would be remiss if I didn't say this. Germain Motorsports has been in business a really long time. They have been a part of this sport. They've won truck championships. They've competed at the cup level. They put a lot of people in a position to make it in NASCAR. And there's about 25 employees over there, which impacts hundreds of people because they have spouses, they have kids, they have grandkids. Those 25 people were probably not very excited to see this news. So when you see all these things that are so positive, there's still people with fallout, right? There's a lot of things coming.
But there's also opportunity coming too.
There is.
You know, some of these people are probably going to get pretty good opportunities, and that'll be great for them. But yeah, you hate to talk about you never want to talk about the turnover and stuff. You know, it's not just in NASCAR; it's in everything.
It's in everything. Look, I mean, I may be impacted,
but these are
today.
Friends. A lot of these are friends, and
yeah,
and people we know. So yeah. You don't like to hear.
It's easy to overlook that side of it, but we have a race team that's closing in Welcome, North Carolina. They're on the campus with RCR. They employ Ty Dillon, obviously, as a driver, but they got people that work there that read on the internet that officially their charter was gone. They were out of work. So I don't know, man. I just feel like it's so great for the sport, but for those 25 people, they were probably heartbroken.
Yeah.
Hey, Freddie, what do you think about the news?
Freddie, how's your contract negotiations going? Have you talked to Michael Jordan?
That's the exact face he would make if you said that now.
That's a f***ing grin you got on there,
bud. It is.
I think something's up.
What do you know?
All right, next one here. Kentucky and Chicago are rumored to lose cup dates on the 2021 race schedule. Could be changed out with COTA, Texas having the All-Star race, or maybe a Bristol dirt race.
I'm not going first. This is Brett's favorite racetrack. He's going to go first.
All right, Brett's going first.
You don't like Kentucky either.
I know, but you're very vocal about Kentucky, so tell me how much you are hurt right now.
Well, here's what makes me excited. I was spot on 2 years ago when the NASCAR leadership came out and said, we're going to have major schedule changes coming. And then last year, around this same time, they kind of backed way off of that and said, well, we may not have as major changes as we thought. And so people got mad. And they said, well, wait a minute. They've been wanting more road courses. They've been wanting more short tracks. What are you going to do about it? Well, then they go add Nashville, a mile and a half racetrack, right? And it's like, well, wait a minute. That's not what people said they wanted. And so now we're looking at places like Chicagoland never running a NASCAR race again in its current state. Kentucky Motor Speedway never running a race again in its current state. That tells me those races are going somewhere. And I know for a fact-ish there's 5 road course races on the schedule next year.
But, you know for fact?
But it's rumored there's a 6th, and that 6th one will be the most exciting of all of them if it happens.
Huh.
So I'm spot on for NASCAR making these major changes. I'm spot off for it taking so long to get the schedule out. I know there's a lot of TV negotiations going on because there's realignments there. Obviously, they're working with tracks on who. Some tracks are not going to get 2 dates next year. Some tracks are going to get a second date. Oh, where's Kentucky going, TJ, right?
Well,
that date has to go somewhere.
What corner are we standing in that one that's going to be really good?
What corner?
Yeah.
What you mean?
You said one's going to be really exciting. What corner the spotter is going to be in?
Oh, I don't know. I want to be on top of Tootsie's. Does it come right by there? I can't wait for this schedule to come out. The word on the street is potentially it comes out on Wednesday. I pray it's true because teams and drivers really need this thing to come out so we can go out and solidify sponsorship. But the only thing I'm not crazy about is this Bristol Dirt Race because We talked about it last week. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but there's too many great dirt tracks in America for us to go. I'm concerned about this. I'm concerned about this because if we go to Bristol and we try to run a truck race, and look, we're going to have to practice. We got no choice. We're going to try to run practice for all three series. We're going to run qualifying for all three series. If we do typical dirt stuff, we're going to run heat races for all three series. Now we're going to run a race on all three series. Can that surface take all that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm spot on for the schedule changes. Now, I don't like seeing tracks lose dates, but I like seeing the schedule flex a little bit and know that we can do this. And, you know, if somebody builds a great racetrack, they know they might be able to get a date now. You know, if you are interested in doing something like that, I think it's great. Just something about covering Bristol and dirt again. I really think, you know, when we watch a track like Eldora, we're on our toes that whole race. Like, oh, is he going to brush the wall? And they're not going super fast. I think a track like Knoxville might be just a little too big for our cars and just not enough banking. I know there, you know, you go to Eldora, you got guys that creep around the bottom. I know some guys can do that at Knoxville as well, but that groove hasn't been there as much. And we've proven the Eldora shows are good. You catch lap traffic quick. You don't, just good, man. It's an exciting event. I loved the All-Star race at Bristol though. I loved the short track All-Star race.
Me too. And now it's going to Texas.
And the short track, I know Chase was really good there and he's fast and won the race, but man, just that stadium effect, man, All-Star race, when we can fill that place again with fans and you know, race for $1 million at a short track. Could you imagine the spring Bristol race there ending like, you know, that be the All-Star race with Joey and Chase going in and racing for $1 million? That's what short tracks can create. We won't have that opportunity. You're just not going to have that opportunity at Texas, I don't think. What are you going to have, throw the yellow and have a green, white checker finish? And we're going to race for, you know, a lap and then we're going to string out. You're just not going to. I don't think you'll get that exciting finish with the way the package is right now. Just short tracks, you just can't get away from each other. And there weren't any fans there. The last race we went at Bristol was pretty awesome. I mean, it was energetic more than it has been what we're used to the last couple months, 2-3 months. There was an atmosphere there that we really haven't felt lately, and it was kind of really good to feel that back. So, really thought that was a good idea, but spot on to the schedule changes in a whole. I mean, I like that it's for years we were stuck almost on the same thing. Like you knew where we were going for. It was how many years in a row I could tell you what date I was going to be where, and now I like it that they move around. No one really has an advantage at some of these new places either. You know, we go to a new track, Nashville. Who knows who's going to be fast there?
You look at NASCAR went and bought all the IC stock up, and then you look at SMI bought all their stock up. It made them private entities again. They do whatever they want. So if they want to take a race from Michigan and throw it to another racetrack, boom, NASCAR can do that. They're going to do that.
Yeah.
Then they're going to, if they want to close Chicago and sell it, boom, they're going to do it. If we want to take a race from, you know, Kentucky and move it to Atlanta, boom.
And don't forget the new track in California too. I mean,
the new track in Fontana. Like, I mean, it allowed us for a big. I think, like, NASCAR almost said they were going to make changes, and they realized, wow, this is going to be a big undertaking. We don't really know if we want to do it. And then they were like, we have to do it. And the things that they've done to get them to this point and get us as a sport to this point, you got to say hats off because they're
excited. I'm excited. We got a new track coming, new tracks coming. Apparently. I'm excited, man.
I think the cool thing for the storylines to play out or look at it from next year's standpoint of, all right, we're talking about running these races with limited practice and or no qualifying, right? So if you look at these new tracks, clearly you need to go there and practice because you don't have any of TJ's famous data, right? So you're gonna have to practice, you're gonna have to race. So if we go to COTA, boom, we gotta practice in a race. But they wouldn't let those full-time cup drivers run the lower series to practice for the cup race. That's interesting. Like, I think there's a lot of cool storylines that come out of this whole schedule.
Which I think is pretty awesome. And they were strict on it, too, man. That guy that ran that sports car or whatever it was.
SCCA car.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, they were strict on that stuff. So, I think it's pretty good. It made for good races.
I think it's awesome. Good stuff right here.
Yep.
Well, and that leads us into the final one here for spot on, spot off, just with the concept of testing. But NASCAR fined Hendrick Motorsports $100,000 for exceeding their allotted wind tunnel time this year. Didn't someone from Hendrick turn themselves in on that? Is that what I heard correctly?
I don't know anything about it. What do you think, Freddie? Oh, yeah? Okay.
He's awful smiley over there.
I promise you he's not smiling at that at home right
now. I also do not have a lot of details on this. I can just tell you that a $100,000 fine in the grand scheme of things with what could potentially be gained with additional wind tunnel time, or if you make a move to get additional horsepower, anything that you do to make your car go faster, if they were going to charge Gene Haas, Roger Penske, $100,000 right now to go find a half a tenth, guess what they'd do, TJ?
Pay it. Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure, too, they took 10 hours of their allotted wind tunnel time next year away. So next year they're supposed to have 80. Now they only have 70. So that was 100,000 and 10 hours of wind time. Jason can probably correct me on this.
So how many hours were they over this year?
It was minutes. They were only over by minutes.
Woo! Somebody better get a new watch. That's a $100,000 watch. We bought a nice watch for that.
Is that like a – that's not – what do you call that? It's not the DVP clock. What kind of clock is that? The Aero AVP clock? Aero vehicle policy? I mean, what do we got?
Hey, Siri, what kind of watch can I get for $100,000?
So if it's minutes, like we talking like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, $100,000 for 20 minutes, I mean, what are we going to pay to – what are we going to pay for a couple hours here?
Yeah.
That's pretty – if it's only minutes, I mean, I'm glad they're strict with it. I'm glad, you know, if it was, I don't know the, like you said, I don't know how many minutes it was, but I'm glad they recognized it and, you know, basically said, hey, this isn't okay. So I know it's not a ton, like he said, in the grand scheme of things, but at least they're recognizing it and, you know, wasn't a secret fine.
Hey, we're headed down to the great state of Alabama to race at one of my favorite tracks, Talladega, this weekend. Now, for those of you interested in moving there, or if you currently live in the area, listen up.
Our presenting sponsor, OfferPad, has a market in Birmingham. Whether you want to buy a home or sell your current home, OfferPad.com is the place to do it in Birmingham.
We absolutely enjoy visiting that area twice a year, and who wouldn't want to live close to Talladega? That would be a pretty epic home track to have. Let OfferPad make that a reality.
All you have to do to get this process started is log on to offerpad.com. From there, it actually takes 5 minutes or less to enter the information about your home. Then within 24 hours, you'll receive a cash offer.
While you quickly weigh on that offer, take time to explore the homes for sale in Birmingham under the Buy tab on offerpad.com.
OfferPad wants to buy your home and help you find the perfect new one. They make it simpler than ever before, and I know you want to get in on that action.
Log on to offerpad.com today to get started.
Make sure you tell them we sent you by selecting the podcast option in the How Did You Hear About Us question.
All right, well, it is time to hit the gas and take our Xfinity speed from the track to the studio. So let's jump into our weekly Fast Lane segment where we're going to ask you guys 6 questions. And each time we're going to see who can answer the fastest and how many you can get right. So TJ, you are up first here. All right, first question here. Where did Joey Logano start on Sunday?
5th.
Who led the second most laps in Sunday's race?
Chase Elliott.
Who was the highest finishing non-playoff driver in the Xfinity Series race?
Oh my gosh, Ryan Sieg? No, he's in the playoffs.
What is a baby kangaroo called?
A baby? A pup?
There's even pun in this one.
A roo?
What is the name of the fairy in Peter Pan?
Tinkerbell?
I knew you knew that one.
What is the total number of dots on a pair of dice?
25?
All right, you got 3 out of 6.
I'll take it.
Hemric was the highest finishing non-playoff driver in the Xfinity Series race.
Good for him.
Yeah.
A baby kangaroo is called a Joey.
Oh, that's
How
good.
How did you not know
actually,
that?
Actually, I did know that.
And there's 42 dots on a paradise. J-O-Y.
Holy cow, there's 42 dots on a... Oh, yeah. A paradise, not one. Okay, I still would have been wrong anyway, but okay.
All right, Brett, you're up. Ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, how many stage points did Clint Bowyer earn on Sunday?
4.
Are you kidding me? Who finished last in the cup race?
Last? Timmy Hill. I just want to say his name.
Who led the most laps in the Xfinity Series race?
Second most?
I don't know who won. Noah Gragson.
You missed another. We're done.
I just know Noah's mad at us. I'm going to say his name as much as I can. Do what?
What color is a polar bear's skin?
Pink.
Which princess lived with the seven dwarves?
Snow White.
How many noses does a slug have?
12.
Good job, 1 out of 6, Brett. TJ's the champion.
Yeah,
Clint,
say that again.
Earned. TJ is the champion.
I mean, Freddie get 0.
All right, Freddie's turn.
I beat Freddie.
Clint Bowyer had 3 stage points on Sunday.
Damn.
Chad Fincham finished last in the Cup race.
I thought I finished 8th in stage 2. That's 3 points. And I finished 10th in stage 1. That's 1 point.
I can double check, but I'm pretty sure you finished 9th.
It don't matter. All right. I still lost.
Polar bear skin is black. Ross Chastain led the second most laps in the Xfinity Series race. And a slug has 4 noses.
Wow. If he led the second most, that couldn't have been many because he hit the wall like lap 30.
I think it was like 15 or so.
Yeah.
All right, congratulations,
self-induced.
TJ.
Yeah, that's right. Smarter than a fifth grader today. Things are looking up.
We're always thinking fast on Door Bumper Clear, and so was Denny Hamlin because he had this week's Xfinity fastest lap at Las Vegas.
You know something else that's fast? Xfinity X5.
Man, it's more than speed, too, TJ. It's reliable, it's secure, so you're safe and connected throughout your entire home.
And speaking of Xfinity, follow at Xfinity Racing on Twitter and stay connected with exclusive behind-the-scenes NASCAR content.
Shout out to Xfinity, premier partner of NASCAR and our podcast.
Casey Boat!
Hey, there she is.
Hi!
Hello! Hey,
look at that little thing. Ah.
Chloe is already bigger than TJ.
Yeah.
I know.
Yep.
Getting tall.
Probably already a better basketball than Jason. Look how pretty you look. New mama looking good.
Oh, yeah. This is like the first time I put on makeup in a really long time. So figured I would make an effort today.
How's mom life?
It's pretty good.
Challenging,
maybe
right?
three hours last night-ish.
And you're up. Freddie has zero excuses right now.
So, Casey, you slept 3 hours. You made the show. You're not even supposed to be on the show. Freddie got at least 8 hours sleep, 4 on the plane, 4 at home, and he missed the show.
Yeah.
Seriously?
But he sent his picks in. Yeah, that works, Freddie.
But, Casey, as long as you've known Freddie, does this surprise you about him that he didn't show up?
No. Honestly, is he drunk at the same time?
No.
Honestly.
You saw the group text. Freddie's the only one that said, I'll be good for 4 hours of sleep. He's the only one that said anything about that.
So from now on, whenever you guys have a West Coast race, just don't even ask him. Tell him, like, sorry, we know you can't commit to this.
We're just cutting his pay. We're taking half of nothing.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Brett, when you were, like, completely drunk out of your mind and Ubered to the show, like, that's dedication.
Yes.
So
thank you.
If Freddie can't, like,
Brett lives a lot further away than Freddie, too. Freddie could probably have walked here by now.
Yeah.
And he could probably stand to walk here.
What kind of show are you running, Jason, where I'm not here and now people are just dropping off?
It's falling apart.
So tell us, Chloe's been a good baby, a crying baby, fussy baby, great baby. Talk to us.
I mean,
you've been thrown up on yet?
Oh, yeah, all the time. She's really good, except she has, like, a ton of, congestion and gas, so she doesn't sleep very often, which means I don't sleep very often. So that's been fun. But otherwise, it's
Where's Chad at?
I mean,
where's Chad?
He's working. He raced all this weekend, so he didn't sleep at all either, which was nice.
Well, he slept in the motel rooms. He slept real good.
seriously. They won on Saturday night and then came home and I was like, I hope you realize you're not sleeping at all tomorrow because I haven't slept, so you don't either. But
that's right.
Susan clearly hasn't changed either.
Well, and Susan clearly doesn't bother
right now. She can hear Susan and Janet's like, Is that my friend?
Apparently, so Chloe is used to Susan, or yeah, by now, because she didn't even flinch when the dog barked.
Yeah, I thought that Susan like would wake her for everything, but I guess because they can hear when they're in your stomach, like for months, she doesn't even flinch whatsoever.
Oh,
it
drives
us up the wall.
How do we know they can hear when they're in your stomach? How do we know that she can hear when she's in your stomach?
I don't know. I just looked it up.
When you would put your head on your wife's belly, wouldn't you get kicked?
True. I guess you can like see light too. It's very weird. I don't know. But either way, I know all that.
I don't know.
She sleeps.
Well, that's good.
So she's got this head full of black hair. Is it falling out or not?
No, not yet.
No.
She's
got more hair than I do.
She's pretty cute though.
I've had mine were different. Malin was born, had a decent amount of hair, then it all fell out, then it grew back. Stella was born with a full head of hair, and now she still has it. It's the hardest part of my day. So I call her the long-haired dragon when she's mad.
I want her to keep her hair, and she has blue eyes right now, bluish gray. So I want that too, even though that's not going to, like, that'll change real soon. But she's pretty cute. I also want to thank you guys because TJ, you gave me like a motivational pep talk via FaceTime before I went into labor. Brett, you helped me with breastfeeding. I mean,
you're welcome.
You guys were on it.
Yeah.
Really on it.
I try to text and keep up with you and make sure you're all right and stuff.
Yeah, you guys have. I mean, you really have. Like,
so you haven't heard from Freddie at all?
On point.
So you haven't heard from Freddie? See, we give you a lot of trouble. Yeah. You know, if you were here right now, we'd probably give you a hard time still, but we do care about you, so.
Thanks.
I do.
Yeah,
anyway.
You
I don't
guys
know about
definitely
Brett.
Care. We're family. I mean, I felt your presence, and I felt your presence. Don't worry. I took your advice. Breastfeeding, Brett, you were really on it, so I knew exactly what to do.
What exactly advice did Brett give you on this?
I'm curious, too.
Yeah,
what did you tell me? You said, like, it was like the first few days, and you're like, make sure you pump. Like, that's really important the first few days.
I said, if Chloe is super fussy, it means she's freaking hungry, and it means your milk hadn't come in, and you need to pump to supplement what you need to make her full. That's what I said.
Look, I've never had to breastfeed myself, so.
I look like I could breastfeed.
Okay, since you said it. I know pumping made it way easier, way less stress in our relationship at home to feed, because then I could do it. You know, I could feed at times too and stuff, which I loved. Because you're doing a lot of this right now. There's a lot of 2-3 o'clock in the mornings when you're sitting there in that chair feeding the baby, and they're just staring at you like, you know, thank you for feeding me. You know what I mean? You just wonder. They're just staring at you. And those are some of the best times I remember about my kids.
It's true. I mean, that helped me. And then like with Chad too, I'm hoping, although we're not at the point yet where he'll wake up with her.
I can't wait till he has that baby alone for the first time. He's going to be so scared.
Yeah. I don't know. I think so. Oh, yeah. I like all like, go take a shower and stuff. Cause I mean, with COVID, I haven't really done a ton, but take a shower and like let him hang, and he'll just watch. Like he was watching the race last night with her, and like, I don't know, just
they don't do anything right now. It's really easy to watch him now. It's you could even, like, in a normal time, you could even take him out to eat and just put the blanket over the thing, and they just sit there and sleep. You eat. That gets a lot more difficult here in about another year. That you'll be like, do you want to go out to eat? No, I don't want to deal with the fit or whatever.
But will I sleep more? Because I would prefer that.
Your sleep will go up here once they get into a schedule. The schedule is important.
Ish.
It'll go up when like I'm like a drill sergeant with my kids. Like when it's nap time, it's nap time. So, but I think you know when they're going to be fussy at that point. At least I liked that. I knew when they were going to be fussy. I knew when they were going to be hungry and stuff. But she looks awesome.
So newborn moms, some love help, some don't like help. You're probably pretty limited in what help you can even have with COVID going on, right? So are you having to do this pretty much by yourself, or you got in-laws helping, or what do you got? I know your mom was here last week.
Yeah, I mean, they're here, and, like, that's the thing. It's tough because every doctor has told us, like, you know, you need the help, but, no, you can't have anybody around her. So how does that, you know, like, that doesn't really tell us much. But we're taking it really careful, like, the first month or so, and they're wearing masks, and not many people are around her. We've just had Chad's, like our parents, both of our parents have really been the ones to help.
People want to kiss babies and they can't.
Yeah, I feel bad that I hate that you can't enjoy a lot of that because, man, you got you have a baby and it's really exciting and stuff. And I'm excited for you. I can't wait till everything kind of clears up and it's safer and stuff and we can see her.
I really want to be able to take her out and not have her in PJs every day. And I mean, we take walks and like we'll do like a picnic or something. But gosh, it is honestly so tough not being able to take her around people that you want to and have like a normal life. I'm like waiting for the day that we can do something like that.
Yeah.
But
Kia is the love on her, man. There's no such thing as spoiling a kid too much when you're just loving on them. Now, if you're holding her all the time, you're spoiling her because she's going to want to be held all the time. And you're going to wish you would have done that.
Yep. I learned my lesson. She's already there.
Good.
She loves to sleep right on top of me like she is right now.
Well, you held her for 9 months already. Of course she's going to want to be held by you. That's how's the Mamaroo? A thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Oh, yeah. Thumbs up for sure.
Oh, really?
She likes it. She'll sleep in it. I started like, you know how you like they have those like things that you can put around you, like the carriers. So I have to start using those because otherwise like I'll sit on the couch and not do anything all day because I can't move because she wants to sleep on me.
So oh, she's spoiled right
already. Yeah. You're going to be recording podcasts with her on your stuck to you.
Well, in my defense, though, she's also been very like congested, so she won't sleep laying down as well. Yeah. So I've had to hold her for that, and then she just kind of got used to it. So
that'll start clearing up, I think. It'll start clearing up here. And
Dr. TJ Majors, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I was going to say, please do.
You know, if you get a little dropper, we've got some medicine over here that'll help her sleep through the night.
Yeah. All right, Casey, we got to keep this thing moving. We love you. We miss you. I actually have a meeting today, and I have to leave. You're always the one who bails on our show. Freddie didn't show up today, and I got to bail. So we will have you back on here before the end of the year. And next week I think you're starting back, right?
We're trying to work on that.
Come on, Chad. We need Casey for about an hour and a half. You can do it.
I mean, please tell him. Everybody tweet him and say, Chad, can you watch Chloe while Casey does the podcast?
Well, you just did. So there's your video clip, Jason.
We'll see.
There we go.
It's good to see you. She looks super cute.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Thanks. See you guys soon.
See you later.
That's a cute little nugget.
Head full of hair.
I'm proud of Casey for finally having Chloe. And
I mean, literally, you can't have help right now. Like, it's all the people used to come help. Man. Holy cow. Mm-hmm.
And babies are fun. Like, it's exciting when someone has, especially, if it's your first one, you want people to, introduce her to people and stuff. So,
yeah.
Tough time for Casey, but really excited and happy for her. Your turn, Hannah. Where's Dylan?
I'm right here.
Is that what kind of music? Is that Barry White we hear in the background?
Oh boy.
You don't even know who Keith Sweat is, do you? You never heard of Keith Sweat. Just
by the facial expressions, that's a no.
Dang, girl.
Well, am I supposed to?
Somewhere out there there's a person listening to this show that graduated high school between 1988 and 1995 and they love Keith Sweat.
See, I was born in 97.
Yeah.
Sounds like you love Keith Sweat.
You were probably made to Keith Sweat.
I was going to say.
I don't know if they had music in Idaho back then, though.
Probably not. You had to play
transistor
the
radios.
While you were doing it.
Keith Sweat. Wow. All right. Keep it rolling.
Ask DBC. Send in your questions 24/7 on Twitter using the hashtag AskDBC.
All right. Back to those questions. Ask DBC. First one is from HR Topham. He said, with the three losing a belt possibly from having ran over debris, what has been some of your most bizarre ways that have ended your day at the track? TJ.
Oh, man. It didn't really end my day, but the time something bizarre that kind of happened was when Dale Jr.'s steering wheel came off and I was just looking at the car and next thing you know, the thing hangs a left and down there in turn three at Talladega, I think it was. It disappears out of my sight. I'm like, what? We were under caution.
And he saved it.
And I'm like, what just happened? My car just disappeared and spun down to the inside. What is he doing in there? So that's
scary.
It was scary. And
Steve Park almost lost his life because of that. Jimmy Johnson wrecked at Bristol because of that.
Definitely. But that was probably the most bizarre thing that I can think of that happened to me.
The weirdest thing I remember, Elliott Sadler, Texas, 2000. I actually had a really, really, really good car with the Wood Brothers, and we'd been racing Sterling Marlin that day, and something or somebody hit us in the left rear, and when they did, TJ, it cut the tire. And when it cut the tire, it shredded it the long ways, and the tire, as it was making revolutions around the wheel, went through the crush panels and managed to start hitting Elliott on his left shoulder blade.
Ouch.
So by the time he stopped, No, he's stuck. He's strapped in. 5-point harness back then, not six. But he's strapped in, and all of a sudden, he has this tire pounding him on his left shoulder. And so he's screaming on the radio. And so I haul butt to the care center. I was doing PR for him back then at Citgo Petroleum. And I get to the care center, and, dude, his uniform is destroyed, and his shoulder is bruised. And Kyle Petty ended up getting in the car to finish the race for the Wood Brothers. Back then, you could obviously put your car back on the track. But Elliott was not in any shape to go drive. That was probably the most bizarre thing that I've ever personally seen put my guy out of a race.
It's like one of those bad massage chairs. Pull, 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 pull.
Yeah, yeah.
Yikes.
Alarming, right?
That would hurt. I mean, there's no way you can, you know, something you just.
It's not soft rubber.
You can't do that. Yeah, you can't just move your shoulder over either. I mean, you literally have to sit there and.
Take it
until the car stops.
Yeah, like a man. Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right, next one from Lucas521. Have any of you accidentally spotted the wrong car like Corey LaJoy's spotter admitted to tonight? Brett, didn't you do that during an Xfinity race?
Nah, man, we'd never spot the wrong car.
What an idiot. Who does that?
I don't know.
You never admit to it.
Yeah, I spotted the wrong car. No. We used to change paint schemes every damn week back in the day. Like, yeah, I spotted the wrong car. At Darlington one time, I started calling a guy on the outside of Dell Jr. in 3 and 4, and I looked down, and he's against the wall. I had the wrong car, and there wasn't anybody near him. And same thing at Richmond. I had been spotting for Allgaier for a couple years, and I was used to spotting this bright orange car. Dell Jr. decides he wants to run that race, so I had to spot for Dell Jr. Well, I look off of turn 4. We're about 8-10 car lengths in front of Allgaier, but I look off of turn 4, and I see this orange car. And there's a car on the outside of him. So I start calling outside. Well, I look at – and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. So I look at the start-finish line, and Dell Jr. is not racing anybody, not near anybody, but he is swerving left on the straightaway, thinking somebody was about to be outside him when he was already against the wall. So at least he listens.
It happens. I mean, if you do enough races, it's going to happen. I did it probably the first time I ever did it. Elliott had run the M&M's car for 3.5 years. He got out of the M&M's car and into the Dodge car, number 19 car. And David Gilliland got into literally Elliott's paint scheme in the M&M's car. And we were at Dover. Man, I started spotting for David Gilliland.
Yeah.
He ain't never heard such good spotting. He's never had a spotter as good as I
was worried.
But too bad he couldn't hear me. I was spotting the wrong car.
I was worried about leaving the 88 because I'd been spotting the 88 since it started. And that was 10 years worth of racing. I was worried about leaving the 88 and going to the 22 and then start spotting the 80, but I never had an issue with that. But
people get confused, man. So we don't just stare at our car the whole time. I have people ask me that. How do you stare at your car for 4 hours? We don't do that. I personally, at a mile and a half track like what we were at yesterday, once all that calamity of a restart is done, I scan what's coming behind Clint, look a quarter of the track in front of him because you want to know if there's runs you need to protect. You know, grooves that are working out to be faster. And then obviously in front of him, you don't want him to drive into a wreck. So, like, we have this routine that we go through, but then something will happen a half the track ahead of him and it'll catch your eye. And it could be that it's a wreck. It could be a pass for the lead. It could be a lot of things, right? But when your attention shifts there, then you have to shift back. And if you have a car like the Menards car that you could literally see from the moon, it's easy to go back to that car. But if you do have a car, like TJ said, that changes paint schemes weekly, it's hard to go right back to that car. And a lot of times you'll associate it with who you're running around because maybe, you know, Joey Logano's car is easy to see that weekend and you knew you were racing him for a position. But it's not like we're staring at the car and all of a sudden start spotting for a different car. And again, I've done it once this year and we were at Darlington and I looked down in 3 and 4 and I looked back in 1 and 2, which is where we were. And I said, clear, all clear. Cause I thought we had passed one of those cars that are 87 miles an hour off the pace. And nothing was said about it because Clint was clear, thank goodness. But after the race, Clint's brother called me out and goes, "Hey, I think Brett spotted for the wrong car that one time. He just started screaming." And then there wasn't any reason to tell you you were clear, all clear. And he was right. And so Clint called me, you spot for the wrong car? I was like, yeah, 100%.
I think I'll tell you what's the most challenging part of that is when is you're not really spotting for your car, but you're spotting – when you're spotting your car, you're using other car numbers. You know, if a guy changes the paint scheme, you're trying to let the driver know because every driver drives a little bit different, has different tendencies and stuff. And you want to be accurate on the car numbers. You know, you'd be like outside the 14. Well, if I mess that up and I say outside the another car, you know, it's a whole different ball game on how
different
you might
dynamic.
How you might drive that, how you might race that corner against that guy.
So let's talk about this. There's no team worse than doing this than the 2, the 12, and the 21. Those three guys.
At what?
That's swapping around paint schemes and looks, and you don't know who's who. Yesterday, I called Blaney the 2,
yeah.
And it was a 12, and they've all got that similar scheme,
yeah.
You know, where they all have the same flow, obviously different colors.
The 21 and the 12, I can see because sometimes Blaney runs the Menards car, and it's like, wait a minute. Okay. So
it's hard.
Definitely. It's challenging. We ran I believe we ran the last Vegas race with two cars that were yellow. Like, I was having to call pit stops on which nose we were coming in because ours and Blaney's car looked just like each other. And but you definitely spot. It's hard for spotters, like, knowing what cars are what. You know, if you're in a battle and you're in a, like, some of them restarts, it's hard to tell when a guy changes a paint scheme or you got four or five different paint schemes. It's can be challenging.
I think, man, look, fans are going to be shocked this week when this schedule comes out. And if you live near Kentucky Speedway, you're going to be upset. I remind you guys that a lot of thought and effort has gone into putting this schedule together. And I think it's truly going to be for the betterment of the sport, not only for next year, but moving forward. It's key, like TJ said, to shake it up. I would think we still see Phoenix as the end race. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, probably. I think so.
And I hope it's the last year we see it as the end race for a while because I like that shaking up, man. I like for us to make it special.
I still like Homestead as the end result deal. It's just been – we don't have repeat winners, man.
I want to move it around every year, and then I want to take a week off, and then I want to have the banquet and the All-Star race the same weekend in Nashville, race at the fairgrounds, let those guys go out there and race for $1 million. All the chase guys. I mean, that's ultimately your all stars because if you want to race, guess what?
I thought the field for that was set correctly.
Go to a short track. Let's do the banquet and all star race all in one weekend. And anyway, I'm not the president of NASCAR, so it doesn't matter what I want to do. But as a fan, don't get on Twitter and start about the schedule and how you're mad that this track lost a race.
Just use it as opportunity to go to one of these
places.
We've
all been
saying
we need to shake it up, and they're shaking it up.
If you're close to Kentucky, and I know, I mean, I love the Kentucky area, man. I love the driving. You take some of them side roads into the racetrack and stuff. That's some of the prettiest countryside that you can see.
We can't take away Chicago and abandon the Midwest. We still have to race somewhere in that area. So be supportive, man.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are going to be happy when this new schedule comes out. But if you're not happy, take a day. And you'll be happy.
And go somewhere new, man. Go to a Martinsville. Just go somewhere new, you know. And I'm sure Brett will be, and Freddie will be more than willing to do a meet and greet when things open up at them tracks. So, be a great opportunity for you.
I think if you're not happy,
you like how it was. Brett and Freddie would be more than happy to do a meet and greet. Not hey, I'll go too because I'm.
I just assumed they would already know I would be there.
Brett
so.
And Freddie will go and meet you.
Of course, I would go.
Freddie won the DBC pick at Vegas with
Freddie
Blaney.
DNQ'd now, this one.
Right. So is he? You're just going to DNQ him here?
He got so lucky. I was going to wear him out until TJ screwed up three wide thing up. Dang it.
I did screw it up.
So who picks first? TJ's first.
Oh, yeah. My guy got in an accident. Oh, boy. Everybody I pick has bad luck. So I will go with... I already picked Kyle. Can't pick him again. I'm going to go with Denny Hamlin.
Solid choice. I have a hard choice to make, Keselowski or Blaney. And I think because it's a wild card race, Blaney's been good there. He and his spotter Josh Williams obviously been clicking on all eight cylinders, so to speak. Ryan Blaney, who's Freddy got?
He has got Brad Keselowski.
Oh, I should have picked Brad then. Screwed him.
Well, we can cut that out. Brett actually picked Brad. Freddie don't know.
Nah, Freddie don't know.
We'll give him Quinn Hoff.
Perfect.
Yes. There we go.
Producer makes the call. That actually should be a good punishment for Freddie. He needs to learn a lesson from this, right?
If you miss football practice,
let's just tell him the entire time that we've decided that since he skipped out and could have made the show in time to make his pick, that Jason has made the pick for him as punishment, and he can still have Brad, but we're gonna make him think the entire time that he has Quinn. P1 Huff.
I like it. And look, Talladega is always wild, but these stage ends right now are going to be as wild. And I know we said this the last plate race we had. It was an elimination race. We had two guys vying for four spots. This one may be the wildest one ever because we're going to have – Joey Logano has got to get stage points. Guess what?
We need stage points.
So does Austin Dillon, and he's dead last. He's P12 out of the playoff drivers. So the 3, the 10, the 14, the 18 – nobody is safe, because if we have a guy like Austin Dillon go and win this race, that puts out another guy on points. Then we go to the Roval, and we have another guy like Clint Bowyer that may be out. He goes and wins the Roval. Boom. Now there's only one person – I'm sorry, five people going on points. So, like, winning these – I've never – like, to me, winning a race – at Talladega starts today. It doesn't start when we buckle in the car. It doesn't start when we get to the racetrack. There's some things that we do to prepare for the weekend. To me, winning the race Talladega starts today. And winning every stage starts today. And that's what we have got, including people like Joey Logano that has two wins this year. I don't think he's in really a lot better boat than Clint Bowyer is.
Yeah, it's the best thing that's coming about this race is we're all going for it. And it's going to be – You're probably going to see less. It's just so the field there now that has to make it so diverse. It's going to be hard for them to say, well, everyone needs to help this guy, because now everyone has about three guys or so that they need help.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to be up there, and even the guys that are safe, like that are in, you got to protect it. So I'm looking forward to that, because I feel like that plays into the aggressive guy that if it's everyone for themselves, I feel really confident about that. So we'll go to work this week and work real hard at fine-tuning things that we need to do and go and try to just run the best we can.
No choose lane, which means we can't align with our teammates.
This week or next week.
You can work with the guy on the front row, which we've seen happen a lot since the tandem racing came about. But outside of that, I think it truly is – the manufacturers are going to have some deals, I guess. But to me, at the end of these stages.
But if you look at the field, it's going to be hard to say that everyone pushes this car right now. He needs a win.
Yeah.
I mean, Chevy's got four guys that could need wins now.
Yeah.
And, the same thing. I mean, we're in right now. But like you said, if one of them guys wins that's behind us, I mean, that changes everything.
Changes it all.
So we need stage points. We need the win. Go for it.
With that, I think they're letting some fans come to the Cup race at Talladega, Alabama. I don't think there's any fans in the stands on Saturday, but there are fans there for Sunday. And I think it's the most exciting race potentially of the year.
Yeah. Shoot, man. This is going to be a big one. It's going to be exciting. Gonna be exciting, and it's like a Wild West, man. It's gonna everybody going for it.
Gloves are off.
Gloves are off.
Hopefully we see you guys down at Talladega. I hope you guys can tune in and watch. One of the places that I certainly miss fans truly being at is Talladega, because I know how hard they party on that infield, and I know how hard they get after it in them grandstands. And we used to spot right where the top of the row of the grandstands was at.
Sure, so, we'll be there again.
Good chance we'll be there again. So Talladega, tune in. I can't hype this one up enough. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, same here. I'm excited.
Hannah, thanks for coming on. Jason, thanks for producing. Dildner, thanks for sitting behind the camera. We out. Holla.
See ya.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Dirty Mo.